If you become absolutely still, even for a moment, everything that's worth knowing is yours.
Sitting on the edge of the river in Varanasi, which is part where they burn bodies to pass them on. And I can see the fires just ahead of me. And I was there last night watching that happen. So I wanted to do a little episode about death and my feelings around it, my experiences, surrendering into moments where I thought I was going to die, and the peace that came over, and kind of the points where I changed my relationship to what death was. I remember reading a book, a Tibetan Book of the Dead, and also learning about a Buddhist practice where you meditate upon your own death and your mortality. And yeah, the meditating really brought me a lot of peace and calm in facing the inevitable. This is something that we're all going to do, but in the West, or at least in the culture I grew up in, it wasn't really talked about much, or I had a lot of fear around it, a lot of unknown, like a lot of unknown things. There's lots of fear around it, and it is also bloody sad, isn't it? If you're going to end the old experience, I can understand those feelings because I've had those a lot, and it's changed at different points where I felt like by the time I hit 30, I had done most of the things that I wanted to do in life. Felt like I had felt such fortune in getting paid to hang out with my friends and film funny stuff and hang out with my funny friends and do funny things and travel the world and get paid to do what I loved. And then I hit this point at 27, 26 or 27, which they call 27 Club for some people, where they end their own lives. And because I went through such intense chronic depression around that period for a number of years, felt like I was heading that way as well. And there's that point where I most considered it taking my life, because the suffering was so much and I found no way out of it. And I was down at my family, down at this beautiful property near Lake's Entrance. And it was like 3 a.m. and I just got up another like night where I found it so hard to sleep because the thoughts were just, I couldn't turn my brain off. And it's hard to describe what it's like when the inner environment is just rampant with mostly negative thoughts. Like, I learned this Buddhist practice later on where I decided I wanted to live, and I found this tool, I YouTubed how to meditate because I felt like meditation would be an answer for me, because I wanted to change my relationship to my thinking. Because my relationship to my thinking was one of compulsive, endless, like insufferable, like never-ending compulsive thinking. I'm doing shit job, I'm trying to describe it, but it's fucking hellish. Because, it's hard to describe. Anyway, so I learned this practice where, this Buddhist practice, where you see your mind as a glass of water and each thought is a black seed. And you identify each black seed, each thought, and then remove it from your mind, remove it from the glass of water and put it in front of your navel and do it one by one. I'm worried about this. I'm worried about what my family might think of me if I'm such and such. I'm scared of this. This is stressing me out. And I found that most of my thoughts, by identifying them and calling them out and in consciousness, in my mind's eye, moving them out of my brain or out of my brain, mind box, and moving it down into like a place in front of my navel. Each time I felt lighter and lighter, and I started watching my thoughts and starting to become aware of what thoughts are in there. And it just created a gap in my, like I said, changed my relationship to my thinking to one of watching my thinking rather than being my thinking. So previously, every thought, every anxiety, every stress, every worry, I embodied, my whole body was like, oh fuck, shit, fuck, fuck, fuck. Just like endlessly to the point my body started shutting down, like when I was depressed. My lung collapsed once, it collapsed again like 3 months later. I had pleuritis, which has sewn my lung up. I had this gallstone that was fucking agony that passed out my gallbladder. I had like chronic tonsillitis, and then I had a tonsillectomy after about a year of that being chronic. All these insane things, my body just was just shutting down because my mind was shutting down. Like, essentially my thinking was so out of control and so negative that my body was like, all right, we're doing this, we're ending. So the body just ceased, it just continued about that, what my mind was doing kind of thing. So that's again another direct experience of how consciousness precedes it. Matter. So in consciousness, in thinking, in that realm, certain things transpired and then it printed out in my body. My body started following suit. So this is it, and that's a good little example of like ancient Indian or Vedic philosophy, where these wise old sages and saints in the Rig Veda, in what's the text called, the Upanishads, or Upanishads, these are ancient texts, and wise old people in this land of India talked about these things of consciousness preceding matter. And then, you know, like in some rule of thinking, it's I think and therefore I am, but this is like I am and then I think. And yeah, there's different rules of thinking in different realms of shit. Anyway, point is, that little wisdom thing, had a direct experience of it, and then, all right, cool, I see that it's true then, at least in my experience. And when these wise old motherfuckers are talking about it, that also goes, all right, there's probably something in it. But not until you experience it, you go, all right, it's almost like you embody the wisdom of it, or the knowing of it. And becomes a knowing, not just a concept and an idea. That's what I feel like encouraged so much, and what I've been encouraged to by the better teachers that I've had. It's like, test it out, break the rules, see what happens, experiment. Take what I've said, but then play with it, and then just make it your own, if you're so inclined. But that way, you have a direct experience with the wisdom, rather than just what the other thing is just like taking, you could say, a doctrine and just living by it. But there is benefit in that if it's a good one and you're convicted by it and your sadhana or your spiritual practice, because it renders a state of consciousness as well. It can, but I feel like, or at least for me, it was super important to have conviction in everything I did. Anyway, so that insufferable negativeness, I was on the family holiday, went up 3 a.m, took myself to the edge of the water. It was a stormy night, and I was just walking towards this insanely ferocious ocean, raining, heavy winds, super dark, thunderous clouds, and I was just compelled to keep walking into the water. And the thought that was trumping all other thoughts was that will take away my suffering. Walking into the ocean will cancel out, will equalize will consume the rage and storm in my head that was so bad that I was wholeheartedly walking towards that ocean as though that will be the answer, that will consume me and it will end. And it felt like the most attractive, appealing thing. It's all wrapped up in sadness, immense, immense sadness, and hopelessness, immense, immense hopelessness. Different thoughts come across your brain, like the people that will affect, how it will feel to drown, and all these little things cross my mind. And as I was walking with that conviction and thought, who knows if I would have actually done or not. I feel like I wouldn't have. I feel like if I was to take my life, I would have found a way that was maybe more painless. Anyway, I was walking with that thought dominating my mind as I was walking towards the ocean and feeling like it was almost like game recognized game. My inner world was reflected in this outer world of storm, so it was just like this desire to be consumed by it, because it identified as what was happening outside the world of that storm inside. And then spontaneously out of nowhere, my little sister started walking over the sand dunes, and I heard my name getting called out, and then I look over my shoulder and I see my little sister shouting my name, and I turn back and I just started crying straight away, because I wouldn't know how. It felt like a miracle, because I snuck out, you know, like she wasn't near me when I left the house to come down here, down to the ocean. And so it felt like a miracle, like a divine hand, or a hand from the divine, tapping me on the shoulder and saying, "You've had enough down here in the old hell." And then we just hugged, and I walked back to the house of her, and it was a bit of a blur, but the feeling it gave was walking towards death and then being tapped on the shoulder by someone who knows me so well and has been like so close to me all my life, and her like kind of gracefully and elegantly pulling me out. And it felt like I was in the pits. It was also, when I reflected on it later time, it felt like that Joseph Campbell thing of the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you seek. Like the immense darkness of that cave. And this is the way I interpreted that, because I've also interpreted that same quote in the stillness, the void of meditation, how the treasure I seek. But also facing, going to the end of myself, created this immense gold within me of awareness of the extent of which I can go in my mind, to the point of wanting to terminate the existence of myself, of this consciousness field, of this body. And so that was like a divine point of intervention. And then I had a few other epiphanies and of it worth being worth living. But point is, once I've realized I wanted to live, I needed to find a way or a tool to pull myself out of that chronic depression. And meditation resonated for me, because like I said, it was a mechanism to change my relationship to my thinking, and my thinking was creating all the suffering. So as I did it non-negotiable, it was like I chose to be choiceless. But every morning I woke and set my boat a course the direction I wanted to be, which was to have jurisdiction over my willpower. So like be oscillating where my will is, and be the captain of this body. And so I did that for 9 months, and it was 9 months every day that I realized I was 1 foot. I remember waking one morning about 9 months after and felt like the depressive thing was, cloud was behind me. Like it was only one step, only metaphorically it felt like one step away from it, but I had transitioned away from the immensity of it. And so that was the first moment of hope, of like, it's worked, this works. And because it was this Buddhist practice, I actually went to this Buddhist temple today, just outside of Varanasi in India. And there was this, I believe it was the first place Buddha was said to have spoken to a group of people after he attained enlightenment. And I also sat under this tree there that was said to be, a woman took the sapling of the original tree that Buddha attained enlightenment under, which I think was in Sri Lanka, and she took a sapling and replanted it here, and so it's, and I got some leaves from it because it's the exact same tree, or the exact same tree lineage that Gautama Buddha, Buddha attained enlightenment under. So that was really special going to today, and I also sat at the, one of the places he was said to have meditated. So that was special, giving thanks to his teachings or his practice that pulled me out of immense suffering. That I, you know, that I did, that pulled myself out of it. So, yeah, and just on that quickly, like I think it's so worth noting that all these teachers, like there's been many other than Buddha that have been a teacher for me, in so much as the wisdom that they say and the energy of their words, the way they resonate with me, and the tools that they teach. Ultimately, I am in a place of reverence and kinship with these people, and acknowledgement for their tremendous state of consciousness and tremendous ability or capabilities that they've rendered in themselves. And there's a fine line between seeing them as my savior and seeing them as a friend. And because if they're a savior and they're saving me, it's almost denouncing my own, denouncing responsibility, which is the most important thing in overcoming depression for me. It was fully empowering myself. So I see their teachings with thank you so fucking much. Absolute reverence, and clearly it's coming from a good source, because look at the stories of these people and look at the words that they've said, so, and look at the tools that they've taught, and they fucking work. So yeah, but ultimately it's like taking full, to save yourself you need to take full responsibility for your inner reality, so therefore a certain amount of a certain amount of ownership of what's going on. So about death, I did a previous episode further up the Ganga River, which comes out of the Himalayas, and this is further down the Ganga River, and I was saying how further up it, it's like it's seen as this life-giving, and all the way down it, no doubt, it's seen like this, but it's this life-giving force of mother energy that brings water to the land. And down here, it was so, up there, sorry, near the Himalayas, it was so clean and green and bluey green, and dipping in it was just, brought so much vitality over the body. It was cold, vibrant, insanely tasting water. It's a beautiful, beautiful taste about it. I mean, just on the lips, I didn't gulp it down or nothing, but it felt beautiful. And then down here, it's dirty as fuck. but like, it's still seen with such reverence, and these do these arti or these ceremonies over it to give thanks to it. But this is known, Varanasi is one of the oldest cities in India, and it's known where they cremate bodies or burn up bodies to give, to as return to ash and return to nature and be taken away in the river. They've been doing this for a long time. And I was there last night watching the bodies get burnt, and it was a very, had a very intense energy about it, very intense. And I, as advised to, as I did this death ceremony for a loved one that was lost last year, I did this death ceremony to help their soul pass over into a new life with grace. I did that at Sadhguru's Isha Yoga Center in Coimbatore, under the Varanasi Hills. And after that, you wash off the energy that you witnessed or experienced somewhat. And so again, like when I witnessed this last night, I went and washed off my body, because you carry it with you as you walk off. It's a very heavy, if you're so much aware of it, I suppose. That's another funny area, is like the difference between your awareness of some experience, or the cynical mind is just like, oh yeah, it's just some other shit. Like, it's, that's another example of that. like healing. It only healed you because you believed it healed you, or it only healed you because someone said it should heal you. That's a bad example. Anyway, point is, down there watching it, and it was super intense. There's this one geezer that was meditating next to it, and his eyes are rolled back, and whew, it was fucking, you know, heavy. Everything was black. There's multiple pits where the smoke was burning the shit out of my eyes, like it was stinging. And I don't know if it was the particular things that they used on the fire to make it, the fire to burn more intensely, or if it was the bodies, or the silk that was wrapped around the bodies, who knows. But there's something about it that was stinging the eyes. And I was watching this body get consumed by the fire, and I saw the arm, and the flesh was having these little, burning up in little bubbles and flaring out, and the skin was peeling back in little spots, and the skull was fully black, and it was very intense to see that was a body passing on, and the loved ones watching it and doing ceremony around it as it was happening, and the fires just raging up, very, very hot. And yeah, I suppose having that direct experience, watching the body, my body, be consumed by fire and return to ash, and then return to nature, return to the waters. It just allows me to realize and watch how my body will also cease to exist and return to the earth. And something about it is very calming, because it's like by watching it happen, I realized that another, like again, these shows, like I said, I've had experiences facing my death previously, but this one was like, well, I've never seen a body be burnt before. And something about that really it makes it more like I don't want to say practical, but I can see what's happening here. That's a body, I'm a body, this is what's happening. It's after my life, my body will cease to move once my soul's left it, I'd say. And then it's just a clump of atoms, lifeless, without consciousness sitting in it. Which is fucking amazing to go right now. Consciousness is sitting in this fucking body, animating it. Like I look at my hands and I can control how they do just by my thinking. Whoop, change it. And they're like, wow. I can rub my hands together and it heats up because the way I choose to fucking orchestrate my bazillion atoms in the ends of these arm sticks. Like, fuck, wow. And then one day that's going to not happen anymore. And it's not like this scary thing, it's just like a matter of fact thing. That's what happens. So it's, that takes away a lot of the fear, I find, among many other learnings I've heard wise people talk about death. Some even have spoken about it from like, talking about their previous lives and what they did in those previous lives. And look, the mechanics of it, so much as I've heard and read and seen people that I trust talk about. And when I say I trust, I may not have experienced those feelings that they're feeling or insights, but I trust a bunch of their other insights and I've experienced similarities. So when they talk about these things, I have a certain degree of like open ears to and open mind to. And they talk about it like your soul incarnates into new bodies, a reincarnation. And that also may be attributing to why some people are old souls, or, you know, like being around for a long time, and some are younger and their behavioral differences are different. They have different behaviors based on those things. And there's lots of teachings and scriptures and wise old texts about this stuff. that also renders a certain degree of peace and calm, knowing that it's ongoing, this whole thing of life. And truly, I do know it's ongoing when I can just watch it for a moment and go, right, fucking humans continue to go. Like, the earth continues to spin around the sun. There's something eternal running the whole thing, because it's far, like, even the life that's going on here goes on for a long time. Like, even so much as what we know of evolution and Darwin, it would have to be like such a positive influence on the West, because he introduced the notion of what the Vedas have been talking about for thousands and thousands of years, which is the evolution of life. And even if we look at that and go, right, crocodiles, fuck, they've been around for neons. Prehistoric sharks, prehistoric, all these animals and lives that have been around for so long, and they've from what we can tell from fossils and whatnot, they've changed and grown and adapted and whatnot, and what Darwin's proven. Life goes on, and there's a certain energy behind the life that you tune in with. I feel like I tune in with, and one tunes in with, in meditation and stillness, when you transcend your immediate experience of reality and drop into a deeper experience of reality, a deeper dimension of reality. That's less like, if you look at the outer dimensions, they're all like, I think they in the Vedic text they call it the karmakand, the karma layer, the noise, the gross material, the things we can touch and feel. And then there's the upasnakand, which is the story and the juicier layers, so the reasons behind. And then there's the gankand, which is the source, the absolute middle of the field. And if you see that as like a big ball, we're just going in three layers in. And that's what it's like in meditation as well. As you transcend, you feel like, oh, the noisy, loud thoughts are vibrating aloud that, like, in the West, it's so loud of, so fucking loud. You drop down, and then you can see the mechanics of where those thoughts have come from, and those expressions and those gross material dimensions have come from. This deeper layer of story and narrative and feeling, and see how they've expressed. And then you go even deeper in stillness, and it's like the feeling as you transcend deeper is actually like what I imagine the water being like in the ocean. Like, you drop to deeper, like it's heavier. There's more weight in it, and it's denser. That's what it feels like. And again, that's another great litmus test. I think I've said it before, but for cross-reference or quality checking, any wisdom is to look to nature and go, if you can perceive it there, then generally it checks out. So using nature and oceanic things are one of my favorite metaphors, because yeah, it's beautiful. So then, as you identify more of that source aspect of what it is that you are, which you could call God, you could call Shiva, whatever, that dimension of being, or that dimension of existence that you can, with your consciousness, tap into and experience and feel and get more acquainted with, that whole dimension, it seems is eternal. The way it feels when I embody it, and when I've been fortunate enough to embody it in that moment on my 30th birthday, where it was all over my body. Fuck that. In those moments, it feels like this all-knowing, all-pervading, eternal energy. Doesn't feel in no way attached to anything. It's just like, it's just all pervading. And again, these words are fucking shit in trying to describe it, but that has rendered me an experience or a knowing of the eternal nature of this whole thing. And the famous saying, Aham Brahmasmi, is I am totality. It's a Sanskrit word, or sentence, or statement, or mantra, or whatever, and it really resonates for how I felt in that moment and how I feel in different layers or different versions of that, or different depths of that at different times when I'm meditating. And more ideally, when I'm with my eyes open, experiencing this life. And if you can see yourself as totality, watching the river, watching the boats, watching the people, watching the sky, watching the air, or just innocently perceiving everything that's coming in through the senses and seeing all that as myself in different expressions. And when I say myself, I'm talking about when I'm dropping into the awareness of the core of totality. That's all pervading, that's actually in everything. It's not just like it's at this center point, although maybe in the absolute fucking huge cosmic universe, it is in a center point. Like galaxies spin around a black hole. The black hole might be the source of it all, if there was to be one. I mean, fuck, look at a galaxy, it probably is, because it's all spinning around it, and it's the densest part, again, like the density seems to be where the source is. And then again, I'd ask this Swami Kalashanand, who's a great master, Guruji, just near Rishikesh, that I visited, and he says if he had to compare his experience to, say, other people's in the room that we're in, he would just say they're different depths. So mine might be deeper than some others. He said that in a very modest way, but point is depth, denseness. So that's what I feel really charmed by doing, and that's what the experiences with death bring about, I guess. They allow you to transcend a degree of fear that you may have. And that's all, again, identifying with the karmakand or the outer layer, the material layer. Fuck, I'm gonna lose my body. I'm identified with my body. I'm identified with my story and my experiences as this local Jeremy. And when I start identifying with the deeper dimension, losing this body is not such a problem. And that's where this thing of like Nirvana or Buddha talks about is like this state of eternal bliss is in those dimensions of self. And when I say self, I mean like totality self, not like Jeremy Kahn self. And they say that's capital S self, it's totality self, I think, I don't really know, but point is identifying with the totality of what it is that I am, coming up as I'm the ocean, but I'm experiencing Jeremy Kahn. I'm experiencing a wave in the ocean, and that's this body. And this body, this wave will just drop down and return to the ocean, and pop up in another wave. Maybe, hopefully, I think. So that's kind of cool. and again, this is very like abstract, some of this stuff, and it's more a sense about an abstract sense you feel when you're in those deeper dimensions that of course my life will go on, of course I'll express myself through another body. And the whole play will go on. Everything is as it should be. It's just a massive, massive, complex expression of life. And what a fortune it is to be even occurring at all on this fucking planet, flying around the sun, somewhere in a massive, massive galaxy, somewhere in a massive, massive cosmos or a universe. Like, how fucking big is it? And where does it end? Or is it just continually expanding? And what's it expanded into? All these things just are mind-blowingly beautiful. And that's again where you just have total surrender into the majesty of the unknown. And what an honor it is to explore more of the unknown and discover a little bit more. And I sense like when I have these moments of like feeling aham brahmasmi, I am totality, that's even no doubt somehow an awareness that's narrowed or dwindled down into a way that this localized field of consciousness can perceive it. way my brain and my instrument can perceive it. Or maybe it's not. Maybe I am experiencing it at the full extent of what it is. I don't know. I do know that it is a gradual scale of more and more depth, because I've experienced those different more and more depth, and I experienced the immense suffering down to the total ecstatic bliss, all produced androgynously by my own body, based on what this mind is doing, or what this soul is able to perceive, or what these energy centers, the different chakras in me, the different energy centers, which I find a whole fucking fascinating thing. It's like ancient Chinese wisdom talks about these same things as well, these energy cross paths. Actually, the chakra that's just below your belly button is said to have has the highest path network of energy crossings. So it's again the densest energy crossing section in the body, and that's why samurais, when they end their lives, if they wish to, they put the sword right there, because it drops their body the quickest, because it interrupts the most densely crossed energy centers. Anyhow, all these energy centers, the degree to which they're open is the degree to which you're able to perceive. So I know I've got more to go with my awareness opening, and I know I've come a long way with my awareness. And, you know, I feel like I've had, to quantify a little bit, I've had my around 7 or 8, I think, my earliest memory of understanding or connecting to what this divine realm of existence is, or God. And I experienced it inwardly and through subtle feelings. And then that got more and more deep and intensely rich through my teenage years. And then when I left that church, Christian teachings, it was super, super intense and super, super rich. And very, very true to what I now know also is the divine, or aspects of the divine. And 24, left the church, went real dark night of the soul, through to 27, 28, and started coming out. 28, 29, and 30 was when I had that moment of what I would classify as enlightenment. It lasted a few minutes, from what I could tell from the song that was playing, and remembering where I dropped in and when I came out. And I recorded a video diary of this. I might play that at some point, me trying to explain what happened. And then, yeah, all the way to 37 now, where my sadhana has been more intense since I was 30. Like, I've always had communion or spiritual practice, like I said, since I was 7 or 8. Well, fuck, I mean, earlier than that, when I was going to church. But when I can remember it from most consciously, it was around 6 or 7 or 8. And all the way through to now, always had those spiritual practices, very, very intense, like I said, real and through my teenage years, amazing experiences, like direct experiences. A lot of doctrine, a lot of things that confused me, but yeah, no doubt, profound, beautiful experiences that I'm so grateful I had, and shared experiences with others on a similar path. And yeah, that dark night of the soul, 24 to 27, 28, came out. And the dark night was probably around 25 to 28, I'm guessing, because it took some downward turn from 24, 25, 26 before I landed in it. Anyway, but yeah, the last 7 years has been much more intense practice, much, much more intense. Actually, when did I start meditating? I think it was like 10 years ago. Yeah, that makes sense, 10, 11 years ago. Every day. And then been meditating twice a day for like 8 or 9 years. And I had a little window there where I experimented with stopping for a few months, and I fucking got angry and it wasn't good. Like, that's how sensitive it is. I realized it is my medication. My meditation is my medication. for my fucking mental illness. And I'm mental, like, I've done some mental things. Mental things. I'm fucking mental, I'm mental. So I need this practice. And I say I'm a mental based on what other people might see me as and also based on how I felt. all right, that'll do that one on death. So yeah, great things to be learned about facing our death. So I'd encourage it for the liberation that it creates of fear, for transcending fear. And of course, I acknowledge that it will be sad when I pass. It will be sad when my loved one I know passes. I cry when my friends die. I cry when my family dies, family members have died. And you mourn, you grieve, for you've loved them and you had those loved experiences of them and they're no more, and you mourn the fact that, you know, that you can't have more experiences like that with them and that they no longer get to experience what they were experiencing. But more than that, I have acceptance, and I identify some of those feelings are like a bit not sensible. You know, like, for example, I don't get to have any more experiences of them. Who's to say that I should have? You know, like, that's just a thought, that's an idea that creates some feeling of suffering. Because really what happened is they had a tremendous life and I had tremendous experiences with them, and I'm so fucking grateful for that. And that's all that is. Like, anything other than that, anything other than what happened and what is a fallacy, is made up, is an idea. And while ideas can be powerful in creating things, they can also be destructive in creating things, in creating destruction or destructing the mind. So it's really worth watching those thoughts and seeing where they come from. And that's that. Like, again, the more you acquaint yourself with the deeper dimensions of what it is that you are, the more empowered you are to navigate your inner reality. You can watch it and you can start to experience, oh, that thought I had that's creating the suffering, oh, it comes from this feeling or emotion, and that. But further than that, it comes from here, what I am watching all this happen. So that is my feeling and experiences of how I've changed my relationship to death to be one of reverence and sacredness. And that's why there's these certain practices. I've got ash smeared on my forehead right now by Shiva devotee, and they see consecrated ash as sacred because it's the thing that takes life, as far as I can tell from what I'm sure it means a lot more than that, but from the little I know about it, ash represents what we return to. And when I say what we return to, this body,
because
we return to that, and the atoms, energy just transfers and comes out somewhere else as well. Even the body that returns to ash, or the soul, or that dimension of existence, may go somewhere else or move through the other dimensions that we experience when we're on psychedelics or in deep states of consciousness and meditation. We see these other entities and other realms that are going on. And that's why also is fucking amazing. Like, when I spoke to her, I was at Burning Man a few years ago, and spoke to this, a neuroscientist? And he was saying, on matters of the brain, what dimethyltryptamine does when you smoke it, it unlocks greater brain capability or more power. So you basically perceive more dimensions of reality. So it's not that you're, because two different people in the same room smoking the same thing can see the same entity moving in the same way. That to me says that, I've heard many stories of that, and that says to me, I haven't experienced that, but that says to me that there's a dimension of reality they're perceiving that isn't subjective, it's actually objective, because by nature of it being more than one person perceiving it. And that runs with what this quantum physicist was talking about. Not quantum physicist, sorry. Fucking neuroscientist was talking about matters of the brain and what DMT does. It illuminates more brain power. So yeah, these dimensions of reality is probably souls, probably I mean, the ones that I've sometimes perceived when I'm deep on mushrooms was soul energy. I was particularly one person I was looking at, their face was morphing or changing into different shapes and different animals, and it was just like changing. And then she left, and she was, I found it very uncomfortable, very neurotic, very intense and multifaceted and unhinged. And then I looked to my friend, and she just had this feline cat just pulsing, just one solid, consistent energy face. Nothing like her actual face, but it was a fucking full cat. And and that I'm perceiving something there energetically on a different dimension, in the way that this being's expressing themselves versus this being's expressing themselves. Anyway, yeah, I feel and I've experienced an eternal aspect that's beyond death of the body. And that brings me great calmness, and it's great, and it's beautiful, and it's powerful to have, to watch death in a body, and having such deep reverence for it, because you see yourself in it, because you see that that's what's going to happen to you. And it yields just like a kinship almost. And again, I don't know heaps about this. I don't know loads about it where I'm like confident enough to say what you should do and shouldn't do in these environments. You just go into it with a lot of humility and awareness of what feels good and feels right, and listening to what people around you that are maybe wiser than you say to do. And that's why I learned to wash after these experiences, to wash it off in the shower. Anyway, loads of love to you. Thank you for sharing this life with me. What a fortune it is we get to be in bodies at the same time, flinging around the old sun. Isn't that cool? What for you? What are the chances? I mean, probably pretty high actually, because it's the most populated the planet's ever been. Anyway, as far as we know, we don't really know, right? I don't think we do. I don't know. All right, lots of love.